You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation. We're welcoming to the podcast Dana Steingold. She's currently in the production of Beetlejuice on the Broadway. And like I just mentioned, excited to chat with her here at the Broadway Podcast Network. If you want to shoot on over to the website bpn.fm/builtforthestage, you can check out other guests that have been on the podcast. Please give us a rating, subscribe, leave a comment if you'd like. And I'm going to shut up now because I want to chat with Dana and have you guys get to meet her a little bit. So welcome to the podcast, Dana.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. So like we were mentioning before, you're in Beetlejuice. You're playing a character that is a Girl Scout. And I want to ask you a serious question to start the podcast. This is a very serious question. So in your prop or your box or your little bag of goodies when you're going to sell Girl Scout cookies, if there were real cookies in there, maybe there are, but if there were, which style of Girl Scout cookies would be in that box of cookies?
So I actually have celiac, which I recognize the irony of playing a Girl Scout who can't eat most of the Girl Scout cookies. So unfortunately, my only choice would be that gluten-free toffee flavor, I think it is, which is totally good. But if I could choose one, knowing the kind of coconut fan I am, it would definitely be Samoa's. Mm. But yeah, unfortunately, my choices are very limited.
This is great that we're stumbling upon this. Such a silly question, but more gold here to dig into. Did the creative team know this about you when they cast you? They cast you.
I think they sort of knew. I came on board with Beetlejuice the very first 29-hour reading like 4.5 years ago. So I've been with it through the whole process. And I think probably most people in the room, as you get to know people and spend time with people, you start to see like their dietary restrictions or any weird things about them and quirks. So I think they knew. But when it came down to actually like talking about it out loud and with props. Luckily, I don't have to eat anything, and I've definitely been in shows where that's been a thing, like Into the Woods, where I play Little Red, and I have to keep consuming cookies, so they're forced to give me gluten-free products only, and they can't be in a basket with other things. But in this show, it's more of an issue with the stage tour because everybody asks me the same question, and I'm so embarrassed to say that I can't eat the Girl Scout cookies.
So my question wasn't even original.
That was. You get points for coming up with it. Because
I was so excited.
I didn't mean to burst your bubble. It was super original.
Now, don't lie. Going back to the creative team and all that, why wasn't that written in? If you were there from the beginning, they should have been like, oh, this, we need to use this. This is brilliant.
I think probably congenital heart disease was enough for her. I think dealing with dietary issues was probably,
it was too
and
much.
Allergies was a whole nother thing. Having an immune disorder also would be awfully tragic.
I got you. I got you. That's right. So I saw the show on Halloween.
Yes.
And that was your microphone didn't work at the top of Act Two.
Yes. I forgot that happened on Halloween.
Yeah.
Yes. People were.
Was that you that didn't turn it on, or did the sound team owe you some drinks afterwards?
Oh, you know, unfortunately, we're not in charge of our microphones. We actually, they're in our head under our wig, so we don't touch anything.
Not in the box, nothing.
No.
Great.
So they're totally like underneath our wigs. And I guess something was happening where like the receiver, something wasn't connecting with like the board, so they couldn't get it on. And then they finally did. But I guess I made some gesture at some point that I didn't realize I did. And it looked like I myself magically turned it on. So if you're welcome, world. I have no special powers, though, unfortunately. But our wonderful sound team figured it out decently quickly, I think.
They weren't like late to the sound booth at the start of Act Two. Just,
no,
they,
I don't think so.
They were eating Girl Scout cookies
yes.
in the green room. And
yeah. It was a Halloween trick. Yeah.
It was kind of funny to experience because that's kind of like the beauty of live theater sometimes. You don't want things like that to happen, but there was a unique thing happening in the audience where some people were like commenting on it in like a joking way, like, oh no, or whatever. And then others were like, shut up, because they're trying to hear you like without the mic. So there's this kind of this interactive thing going on out in the audience while that was happening.
Yeah. Well, I think the beauty of live theater is that it's ephemeral, right? So things happen and you can't necessarily create it again. But I think whenever sets fall apart or costumes go awry, anything like that, sound, I think the audience is almost automatically more on your side because they know they're part of like an individual moment that is not going to happen again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our show has a lot of moments that feel like that, actually, that feel improvised, but they're actually written. I would say like 98% of the show is pretty much the same every night, but feels, thanks to Alex Brightman and his brilliance and my other cast members, very off the cuff and unique to that evening. But I think, yeah, it gets the audience kind of on your side. So it was nice. I got a lot of cheers at the stage door saying like they were so excited when my mic came on and they were coming and they loved the song. And, you know, that kind of support is always great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. So this character and you're understudying Lydia, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you just mentioned you had played Little Red in the past.
Yes.
With your type, you're petite, right?
Mm-hmm.
So are you tending to be in these younger like teen roles as an adult, and how are you able to pull that off so well? Because you do. It was lovely that night that I was there to watch it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I definitely have not graduated yet, for the most part, into roles that are my own age. But I think that will just sort of naturally happen one day where I'll stop being believable as a teenager. Because
mm-hmm.
I think it's an energy thing more than anything else. Like, yes, I am small, but I think there are a lot of small and young-looking people who also feel much older. And I remember my very first job out of college was doing the tour of the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And James Lapine said something, who was our director, to all of us that I've carried with me to this day, not knowing how long I would use it for and how many years. But he said, you all look so young. You never have to play at being young. You just have to play the essence of youth, which makes total sense to me, because I think the real truth about being young and acting as a, you know, I guess playing a teen, is that things happen moment to moment. You feel things so quickly and it changes, and the highs are so high and the lows are so low. And we can really all relate to that, even as adults. Mm-hmm. And we remember that so vividly. So it's actually not hard to drop into. And I find that if you just kind of let yourself go and pick like two mannerisms, and it's very freeing because you don't have to censor yourself in any way that I think we do as adults, because we're like, God, it would be so weird if I picked my nose right now, or like moved this wedgie from my butt, or like touched my face that way. But as a kid on stage, you're like, well, I can do that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of freeing in a weird way.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's like working out all your issues and like all your weird therapy in front of 1,500 people.
I was about to say, yeah, all the things you hold back from in real life, you kind of just get to let go of on stage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No composure is needed.
Yeah. So you just mentioned highs and lows. So you're on this high, obviously. You made your Broadway debut in Beetlejuice. And you've been pounding the pavement, though, and have had a great career up until then. I've followed you and checked out all your stuff here. When you got to this point of being on Broadway, was it what you expected? And what is it? What is it all? What people have it made out to be? If you can kind of follow me on that,
yeah.
Because fitness wise, I was kind of talking to you about this before the podcast. There's always this journey, right, in fitness of where you think you want to be. And then there's always like you get there and there's the comparison of like, oh, well, what's next? Or, you know, sometimes it could be a feeling of dissatisfaction. So how was your experience of getting there?
Well, I think, you know, I was actually supposed to make my Broadway debut back in 2000.
I was going to talk about
that. Oh, well, I won't skip ahead.
You can bring it up. Godspell, you're going
to
bring up.
Yeah, I was supposed to, right after Smelling Bee, I booked Godspell, and I was supposed to make my Broadway debut. And we got canceled about 5 days before we were supposed to start rehearsals. So I was actually, I'd flown home to Michigan to see my family. I was in the airport waiting to board the plane, and I got a call saying we were indefinitely postponed. And then I was just this weird girl on the plane who was like, okay, I'm not exactly sure what just happened. I think I don't have a job next week, but I'm unsure. But I think I've always been the kind of person who just is sort of like, I give myself a set amount of time that I'm allowed to be upset about something. And then I'm like, okay, moving on, because the only way to keep going in this business is to put one foot in front of the other. And I think constantly just redefine what your wins are and what success is. Because Broadway is amazing. And finally getting here now, I think I appreciate it a little bit more because I worked so hard and the path has been longer for me. But as incredible and special as it is, performing is performing. And sometimes your most special experiences are actually like take place at a regional theater in the middle of nowhere that nobody is going to be privy to see. But you'll carry that experience with you. And you just never know what connections you're going to make on any job. So while it is incredible and I am beyond grateful, and especially to be a part of a show with this kind of like fan base attached to it, which I've never experienced before. The journey was long, but I also think that the next thing, whatever that may be, will be equally as great, even if it's kind of like a smaller, quieter thing. So yeah, I'm trying to like circle back to your...
Yeah, no, it's great. How did you, through the journey of the ups and downs, how did you stick it out? Were there any times where you kind of fell off the wagon and then, you know, fell off the wagon in a sense of like you stopped going to auditions or you kind of were hitting a cold spurt or were you just kind of like head down grinding from the time you were, you know, just getting into the career and until now?
You know, I've always been a practical person as well as a dreamer, which is a weird combo. So I've always, like, once Godspell fell apart, I said, you know what I will not do? I will never not have a day job. No matter what I'm doing, I will figure out how to keep one foot sort of like in that world so that I have something that I don't have to stress and I don't have to go into every audition thinking about, oh my gosh, like if I don't get this job, it's bad enough to think I won't have insurance, right? But
right.
But I never wanted to feel desperate and I wanted to be able to choose the things I wanted to do. I wanted to do new work. And I think that so I've always kept a day job. Even when I was doing Avenue Q off Broadway, I still kept my day job as a personal assistant. Even now, I have a friend who does it full time, but I still have like one foot in and kind of like come in, help out. And I'll probably go back to that in July as soon as we're done. But I never, there's something in me that I guess said, this is what you're meant to do. And I never questioned that part. So I was able to keep going, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, even though sometimes the lows are very low, if you surround yourself with the right group of people, the right team around you that supports you, encourages you, makes your wins their wins and vice versa, I think you can kind of wait out anything because it doesn't happen right away for a lot of people. Some of the most brilliant performers I know quit the business before it ever happens for them because mm-hmm. they're just not the right type right away. And it's tough to wait it out and grow into it. and it's hard on your heart, it's hard on your mind, and it can be really hard on your relationships as well, because the people who love you are also watching you struggle. And I think it's sometimes harder for them than it is for you. Like, I think it's harder for my husband and my parents to watch me go through the ups and downs than it is for me to actually take them. Like, I'm pretty strong, but I do feel upset if I think that they're upset for me, if that makes sense, because mm-hmm. I didn't get something or whatnot.
Yeah, so if you're listening and you're in the business or you're chasing after some fitness goals, a couple of great things that I just picked up was just that Danner's remained practical through all of this. Even though she's aspiring and dreaming and chasing big things, you still have to keep your feet on the ground and while your head are in the clouds. Surrounding yourself with great people, which is something that we talk about a lot on here. So make sure that you're doing that out there. I think a common thing is them saying that you're the sum of the you're the average of the five people that you hang around the most in your life. I totally believe in that. And then the thing that you said that I just recently that I like the most so far is just you give yourself kind of like a deadline of like how long you're going to feel bad about this and then when it's time to move on. With that, so going back to Godspell, in 2011, not the same producing team, I don't think, but the show did end up going to Broadway, and a couple of people from your cast, they were cast in the 2011 Broadway, but you were not. How did that go, or were you booked? How did that happen? What all went down there?
Well, it was tricky. For a while after they were sort of had us recording the new arrangements and all kinds of things, doing concerts, trying to get it off the ground, when our producers and the financing fell apart on that particular production. And it sort of faded away in years past. And then there was an announcement in Variety, I think it was, that Ken Davenport was producing it. So it was a totally different producing team, and he just had a totally different vision of what the show was going to be and what the tracks were. So they kind of started from the ground up, and a few people did move with it. I was not one of them.
So how did you work through that? Was that tough for you? Was that...
Yeah, certainly. I think it's always tough when things don't go your way, especially things that you have a history with. And I'm sure you've heard this time and time again with the people you've talked to, that, you know, there are things that you develop from the very beginning or go out of town with or commit a very sizable chunk of your life and time to, and they don't pan out and you end up getting replaced right at the last minute for whatever reason. Either they're going a completely different way, or this track now has to cover this track, which you're not appropriate for, or we're combining these two roles now. And I really always say, like, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And it just wasn't the time for me. And now, in a way, I don't want to say I'm grateful that that didn't happen, because I would have been thrilled to be a part of that wonderful production with my friends. But this has been such a satisfying Broadway debut. And I got to do all my dreams were hit in this one magical gift of a job for me. I got to originate a role in a new Broadway show. I got to go to the Tony Awards and perform on them. I got to do the Thanksgiving Day Parade. I got to do an original cast recording and do my own song. Like, it's kind of hilarious. Like, if I had written all of my dreams as a child on a piece of paper and, like, folded them and then reopened them last week, those would have been the dreams. So, in a way, it really is proof that if you wait it out, this business is not linear. It ebbs and flows. You have times where you're working a lot, and then you'll go 5 months where you're not working at all and go through a total dry spell. But I think if you believe in yourself and believe in what you bring to the table, ultimately it will work out for you. So I don't want to say I'm glad I didn't do the show, because that's a lie. I wish I could have done it.
Yeah.
And it was challenging at the time, and I was upset. And I think the hardest thing to hear always is getting that call from your agent that says, like, it's not going to go your way, which is such an interesting phrase, because it seems so kind, you know, but it's actually so terrible when you hear it.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, after all this time and all this heartache, you just get it's not going to go your way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I immediately said, like, okay, what's the next thing? Like, I was definitely upset. And I think the thing you have to remember is that the humanity of the whole business, and you wish for emails and you wish for texts and calls saying we're so sorry and an explanation, but 99 times out of 100, you're not going to get one. So you just have to be able to like close that chapter for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of the time in business, it's not personal. So as hard as it is, you have to try to not take it personal. But it's a career built around yourself.
Absolutely.
So it's hard not to take it personally because you are the product, you know?
You are the product. However, I do try to just say, like, this is the best. I'm going to go in as prepared as I can be for every audition because that's the only thing I can control, essentially. So as long as I present myself well, whether I book the job or don't book the job, doesn't matter. And it's quite frankly out of my hands because I always say it's like kind of a small miracle when you get a job, because especially at the Broadway level, because so many people in a room together have to agree and say yes. And you walk into a final callback and it's not like there's three or four people. There can be like 25 to 40 people in the room. And often the time, you know, you could be going in five or six times and then someone comes in at the last second and gets the job. And sometimes I really believe that there's like, if anyone's not on your team and there's like five people who are and three people who aren't, and it's caused a little bit of a riff, and someone new comes in and everybody can just agree.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just goes that way because it's easier, you know? So I really do think things happen for a reason and you are a part of the jobs that you are supposed to be a part of.
Yeah. I liked also what you said when you were saying like, I didn't get it. And then my next question is just, okay, what's next? Meaning I say a lot to my clients, we are where we are, or what happened is what happened. But now, okay, what can I do about it, if anything? And if not, it's time to move forward. Take your time, like you said, to recover or have your emotions be addressed as to what you need to take from that, and then move on. And I think with the new year, we're doing this interview here in January, people struggle sometimes just moving on. As simple as it sounds and cliche, but we tend to live in the past. Or in a world of comparison, where when you don't get that role, you're looking around at who does and what am I missing that they have and I don't.
Sure.
And I know a lot of time in fitness, a lot of my clients are doing the same thing.
Out of 10, like if you put in the work, you see the results, where that's not always true in our acting careers. You can put in all the work, but it's not directly correlated to the results.
Yeah.
You know? It can take years and years and years, and you're planting seeds, but you're not necessarily like growing the full tree yet. But for the most part with fitness, if you make a goal and you work really hard to get to the goal, your body will probably respond.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like a very natural fit because we can control it.
Yeah, it's very therapeutic for the actor because it's something that, like you just said, when you're putting the work in, the results will come.
Yeah.
There is no casting director saying, you get to have strength or speed or aesthetic results. No, you don't. We don't have the costume for you.
Exactly.
Or I can't get this producer to sign on board for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say like my commitment, I'm usually like a 5-day a weeker, but it ebbs and flows depending on like, again, listening to your body. And like sometimes getting through the HO week, you need that extra workout. And sometimes your body needs sleep and is telling you it needs sleep.
Yeah.
You know, so depending on the schedule I'm on, it gets more intense or less intense. And sometimes as my results do as well.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that now.
It's definitely an ebb and flow of how to marry your fitness and performance together to work for each other and not against each other.
Right.
Because some people are either doing the one spectrum of hitting their head against the wall without realizing it and just kind of burying themselves.
Yeah.
And then the other side is, oh, I can't do anything fitness-wise because it'll affect my performance, when in actuality it could actually enhance it if done correctly. But
yeah.
Cool.
Thanks. And I think like, yeah, it's like figuring out like quantity over and or rather quality over quantity sometimes, I think. And we all push ourselves for quantity, but it's not always like the best thing.
Sure. Yeah. And what could even out the imbalances that are happening because of your show and the repetitive things you're doing 8 times a week, and what you need to do to kind of balance it out in the gym or in a class or something like that.
Yeah.
If you guys want to try a free trial, don't forget, go to the website, builtforthestage.com, and fill out your name and email. Go to the Instagram, at builtforthestage. Give us a follow. Shoot us a DM. Say what's up. And we'd be happy to chat it up with you guys. Don't forget about Broadway Podcast Network. Go to the website, broadwaypodcastnetwork.com. Go to the Instagram, Broadway Podcast Network. There's tons of good content on our network, like Josh Swallow's Broadway, or Ensemblist, or Equity One, or The Theater Podcast. There's like 90 of them. Just go see which one you like the best after you've listened to mine. And yeah, you guys have yourself a good day. It's me, Roscoe, signing off.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.